శలాఖయ చక్షురు ఉన్మీలితం ఏన తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః. డియర్ ఫ్రెండ్స్, as I conceive, there are two concepts which rule the entire world. One I call as micro and the other macro. One is subtle, the other is gross. One is condensed and the other is enlarged. One is invisible, the other is manifested. Well, the seed, for example, is so small, but it is the big tree in the micro form. We can apply it to almost every aspect of nature. For example, the growth of human being himself from micro to macro level. Well, let us take the growth of science, for example. A small act of seeing an apple falling, as we all know, was responsible for the discovery of the big scientific truth. The human body itself can be conceived as a micro representation of the entire cosmic macro level. I attribute some of this micro-macro development to the rituals as well. I say this because symbolism is part and parcel of all the rituals. There will be an element of symbolism in every ritual, for that matter, in every religion. The symbol, as I see, is a micro concept, and it represents a bigger concept at the macro level. The symbol is a subtle act that has a deeper and greater significance in that the macro level. It is difficult to understand because it is very subtle, but it has to be followed for later realization. That is why there are so many symbols in our rituals, and we are simply expected to follow them, all in the symbolic form. Well, if you break a seed, you can't find a tree inside it. It has to be preserved, nourished, sown, watered, provided with manure, and carefully attended to. Many of us like gardening. We have to do a lot of digging. We have to manure the field. We have to sow the seed. We have to water it. We take so much care to bring up a plant. But how many of us pay the same attention and care to our own children? Do we at least spend an hour for the sake of our children? Do we interact with them? Do we converse with them? Do we understand their problems? Do we talk to them? Just as a creeper needs a support, and a plant or a creeper has to be monitored, its growth must be monitored, the leaves or some of the even the branches have to be cut, and then only then the growth is normal, it spreads. Likewise, certain curbs, certain restrictions, certain directions, certain instructions are necessary for the growth of the child as well. Unrestricted growth is always dangerous. Unrestricted growth of a tree, for example, as we all know, can shatter the foundation and ruin the entire structure. So this I apply to the growth of child as well. So it is necessary that at the age when the children are amenable to our advice and they are ready to follow whatever they say, we have to nurture them carefully. We have to inculcate good habits in their mind. Too much of pampering and privileges given to them will only spoil them, as we all know. Spare the rod and spoil the child, it's a proverb, as we are. So it is in this context that we look upon the Upanayana, the initiation ceremony. Because in those days, at the age of 7, the boy will be provided with the Upanayana function will take place, and then the student will leave with the teacher to a distant place, to his ashrama, at a remote place, sometimes in a forest. He will only be then free from all temptations of life and unnecessary attractions and all these things. Well, this was known as the Gurukula system of education, and it worked well for several centuries. The first step in this Gurukula tradition is initiation. The educational process will begin only after the initiation ceremony. And that is why it is very important for us, the Upanayana. Many of them, as we see, will be symbolic acts, but all of them will have a major important macro concept behind them. And it is in this background that we are going to approach the initiation ceremony, the Upanayana. So this is in the fifth lecture of the series. We are going to see about the Upanayana or the initiation. The word Upanayana itself means going near. Ni nai means to lead or to carry. The student is led to the proximity of the teacher. The teacher has to take him and then mold him, mold his character, mold his life, everything. It also means taking near the Vedic study, because after the initiation only a student is eligible to take to the Vedic study. So this is actually the significance of the ritual. Simply means, it literally means taking him near somebody. But with all the ritual background, with all the symbolism, well, it at the macro level, it signifies the entire educational pattern, all that he has to do, and a discipline that is inculcated, the free-flowing thought between the student and the teacher and the taught. And all these things are brought out by the symbolism that is found in the particular ritual. Well, as for the actual performance of it, the Upanayana has to be performed on the seventh year, Garbhashtama, it is said. That including the year spent in the garbha, in the womb, it is to be 8 years. That is, seventh year after his birth, the Upanayana has to be performed. The spring, summer or autumn, they are considered to be the fit season for conducting this ceremony. So an auspicious day is selected. Generally, it is on the brighter side of the month, brighter portion of the month. Now, as we have seen already in the wedding ceremony, there are a lot of preliminaries to be observed. Like, for example, Vinayaka Pujana, Punyaha Vachana, Udaka Shanti, Ankurarpana, that is sowing the seed, and then Pratisara Vandana, that is tying a small thin thread anointed with the turmeric powder. It is tied to the hand, wrist. And then Nandi Shraddha, that is conducted in honor of the departed souls. So all these preliminaries have to be observed. So generally what they do is, they begin these preliminaries on the previous day of the Upanayana ceremony. Then the ritual proper begins with a sacred thread ceremony. A sacred thread, again, it's a symbolic act. It is presented to the boy with a particular mantra and he wears it. It is a thread of a very thin thread. It should be threefold and it will have a knot. It is known as Brahma's knot. It is very important. And the mantra recited, Yajnopavitam paramam pavitram prajapatehe yat sahajam purastat ayushyam agriyam pratimuncha shubhram Yajnopavitam balamastatejaha. The ceremony is called Yajnopavitam, sacred thread wearing ceremony. Well, in two or three of the earliest Grihya texts, it is not mentioned. But in the later Grihya texts, it is mentioned. And so probably this was not there originally, but later on came into practice. But wearing the sacred thread, it's a symbolic act. It symbolizes purity and his adherence to the Vedic study and the spiritual brilliance that he must attain and the spiritual strength he must have. All these things are signified by wearing the sacred thread. It is worn like this, that is, from the left shoulder to the right side. Well, there are three types of wearing on three different occasions. Normally it is worn like this, it goes like this, so it is known as the Upaviti. Sometime it has to be a little bit transferred, that is from the right shoulder to the left side. On occasions when a person performs, the funeral rites or the ceremonies for the departed fathers, the sacred thread has to be worn on the other way, in the reverse time. Again, it is symbolic. And then while offerings are offered to the rishis, the sages, then he has to wear it like a garland over the shoulder. That is known as Niviti. This is Upaviti, this is Prachina Viti. Like this, like a garland, it is known as Niviti. Though perhaps this wearing the sacred thread came a little later in the order, it is very important, considered very important. Yes, students should not remove his sacred thread on any account. If it is dirty, then he has to transfer, he has to wear another one and then only remove the older one. It's not like removing your shirt and putting it for wash. One should not take it out on any account. It is attached as much significance as, for instance, as we have seen, the Mangalya Dharana, that is the wearing of the Mangalya by women during their marriage. When it is tied by the husband, it's very sacred. They attach a lot of importance, emotional importance to it. As much of importance is attached to the wearing of the sacred thread also by the boy. Next comes a small ritual, little bit folk in the tradition, we can say, known as Kumar Bhojana. The boy is fed along with another one or two boys who have been recently, for whom this Upanayana has been performed. Two or three boys, they all sit. And this boy, for the first time, he is taught to offer his worship to the food. As we have seen in the food paper that day, he has to sprinkle a little bit of water and then throw some water around with a particular mantra. Om Tat Savituhu Varendim Bhargo Devasvatimhi. Then he chants the mantra. And then Satyant Vartena Parishinshyami Devasavita Prasuva. Then he takes that water. Amritobastaranamasi. Then for the Pancha Pranas, he offers the Ahutis. Om Pranaya Swaha, Apanaya Swaha, Vyanaya Swaha, Udanaya Swaha, Samana Swaha, Brahmane Swaha for the Brahma. So that is how for the first time he is taught to offer his respects to the food, so that it should be for his welfare. It should be like Amrita, nectar, contributing to immortality. And this is a time when the mother has to serve, and she has to serve the food which is not very spicy, which is not saltish, docile, or sattvika type of food is to be offered to him. Well, this is symbolic of the fact that for the entire period of his brahmacharya, he has to have only this kind of sattvika type of food. And perhaps I can find another significance also. This is perhaps the last time when the mother feeds him before sending him away with the teacher, because he is to be then with the teacher for the next 7 or 8 years. He is not going to return home. And by the time he returns home, he will be ready for his marriage. So a lot of importance is attached to it, as the mother, after sending him away, well, before that she wants to feed him, and therefore this has got some emotional attachment also. We have already seen in one of the earlier lectures that the wearing of the tuft, the dressing, the hair dress, is very important. It is given an importance. It's a ritual is performed, chaula. On the day of the Upanayana also, a shaving has to be performed. Symbolically, the father cuts a little bit of hair on different directions, uttering the proper mantras. And then later on, the barber will be invited, and that boy, he will perform the shaving. While shaving the child, symbolically, the father utters one or two mantras. Ushnena vayoho udakena yehi adithihi keshan vapatu apavundantu jeevase dirghayatvaya vachase jyokcha sudyam drishe. That is, I am just mixing hot water and cold water, and then I am going to cut your hair. But he doesn't say, I am going to cut your hair. He says, Lord Aditi is going to cut your hair. It's a very simple act, cutting the hair and preparing his hair dress. But then the father doesn't say that I am doing it for your welfare. He says it is attributed to the Lord. So that is the Indian tradition. Even a very simple act is attributed to the God. It is he who does it. It is he who is dressing you like this. And let the waters bring you welfare, and let them bring you dirghayitva, that is long life, and may you see the sun for your entire lifetime. The idea is your vision should be bright. And then a mantra is uttered dedicated to Vayu. O Vayu, come hither. Let Aditi shave his hair. Let all the divinities moisten your hair for your long life and spiritual luster and brilliant eyes. Well, in all such cases we see that whenever blessings are offered, the priest or the father, he doesn't say, I bless you. He always says, let Aditi bless you, let Indra bless you, let Agni bless you. That the act of saying, I am so and so, I can bless you, I have the capacity, that kind of ego is slashed. That is only every act is dedicated. Though they may sprinkle some water on his head and bless him, they will say, it is only God, Agni or Vayu, who is blessing you. So this is a very a significant thing that we see in all the rituals. So they pray for spiritual luster, spiritual brilliance. And spirituality, as we see, is not something exclusive in life. In every act, in every part of life, there should be a mixture of spirituality. And that is why even in a small act like, you know, the cutting the hair or giving him a new dress, well, it is dedicated to your Lord. Now, then a prayer for the brilliant eyes, because one must have a great vision, a long-range vision, to observe things in the right perspective and grasp the true nature of things. That is why a prayer for brilliant eyes, a good vision. And this is a ritual for education. And therefore, the emphasis is laid on seeing things in the right perspective. Because education, as we see in Indian context, is not just education reading books for that matter. There is a holistic approach for that matter. It is just ordinary, not bookish education. It's sort of character-building education, man-making education that is sought out. And education is symbolically represented by the eyes always. Education is, you know, symbolically represented by the vision, seeing, as we have a stanza. Aneka samshayochedi parokshartasya darshakam sarvasya lochanam shastram yasya na asti saha andhayeva saha. Education is the dispeller of all doubts. Aneka samshayochedi, samshaya means doubt. It dispels all doubts. And it can bring you things nearer to you, even things which are beyond your vision, beyond your eyes, such truths can be visualized by you. And therefore, education is an eye for everybody. And a person who doesn't possess education is equal to a blind man, andaha. So that is kind of education that is insisted upon, that was taught, and the students were trained in all shastras, not simply bookish education, practical knowledge as well. And that is the idea that is emphasized here. And that is the idea behind praying for brilliant eyes. Again, the father prays that Soma, Varuna and Savita, they all must come and bless this boy who is now initiated into this educational ceremony. Now comes, because after this is over, the boy is given a sacred bath, and then he has to perform a ritual dedicated to Agni, the fire god. He stands on a platform on the sacred darbha grass, and then he has to worship Agni. From here onwards, from this particular point onwards, the spiritual teacher who has been invited takes care of him. The teacher who is going to take him away to his abode for imparting education, knowledge. Now he will take care from now on. The father has no more role to play. So now the teacher prays for the welfare of the boy. He prays And therefore, it's a sort of a conversation that we find in the entire ceremony. The teacher addressing the boy praying for his welfare, and he is thanking the gods for giving him a good spiritual teacher. So it all, you know, the whole ritual goes on in the form of some kind of a conversation, and therefore sort of a dialogue. And that is why I have given in the handout the Upanayana as a ritual dialogue. You can even consider it a spiritual dialogue or a ritual dialogue. Either way, it will be very, very significant. So at the first instance, the teacher prays for the welfare of the boy.
Ayurda deva jarasam grunano ghrita pratikaha ghrita prishto agne ghritam piban amrutam charu gavyam piteva putram jarasenameyam.
That is to Agni. O Agni, the giver of long life, having limbs that are nourished by the oblations of ghee, may you accept our prayers and lead this boy to the old age. The idea is he must live long, like a father attending to his son. While in the learning process, both the teacher and the taught have an equal and important role to play. It's not a monologue. The teacher alone keeps on talking the chalk talk method and the students just listen. There should be a meaningful dialogue between both. Well, if only the teacher has a role to play only when the students are available. And if the students may be there, if no teacher is available, then they are left in the lurch. And therefore, both are equally important in the learning process. A teacher has to inspire and make the students get interested. Well, if it is just going to give a monotonous lecture, the students are likely to fall asleep. Just one example I'll give you outside the scope of this lecture. A teacher and an insomnia are contrasted, compared and contrasted. There is only one difference between them. An insomnia talks when he is asleep. A teacher talks when others are asleep. And therefore, such a thing should not happen in any learning atmosphere. And therefore, a teacher has to be very, very vigilant. He has to cater to the needs of the students. He must evolve. He must involve the students and then initiate discussion. And it should be a two-way process. And it is in this context that we find this Upanayana ritual as full of meaningful dialogue. And that's what we find in the most of the prayers that are uttered also.
Sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, saha vidyam karavavahi.
Let us learn together, the teacher and the taught, both of them pray together. Let us seek the truth together. It is not that the teacher alone knows, he imparts. Both of them are equally important in the process. Whatever we eat, let us eat together. Saha vidyam kara, let us make our learning meaningful, very brilliant. And let us not have any dvesha between any ill feeling, malice or ill feeling between us. Ma vidvishavahe. So this is the idea with which the education goes on. In fact, there are a lot of occasions when a teacher learns from his student. It is a learning process for both. The teacher may know a little bit more, but then it is in the classroom atmosphere that he definitely learns some more. Then, as in Vivaha, the next point that we see, point number 7, the other point we have seen, mounting the stone. As in the Vivaha, we have seen already, the boy is led by the teacher to a stone slab, and then the boy mounts on the stone slab, and then the teacher prays. He says, Atishtemam Ashmanam Ashmevatvam Sthirabhava Abhidishta Pratanyataha Sahasva Pratanayataha. Mount this stone. May you be as firm as the stone. Because student life is not an easy life. He has to be very firm, like a stone. Do not mind about all your opposers or your opponents. Stand up against them. Fight against them. Especially the life of a brahmacharin. When the student leads a life of celibacy, it is called as brahmacharya. Brahmacharya in the sense, not only physically but also mentally. in mind, word and deed, he has to observe brahmacharya. Yes, see, a celibate life. So the boy will have to forget about all the comforts, and he has to go to the ashrama of the teacher, the far off place, the distant place, and then attend to the studies steadfastly. He must serve the teacher also, and he has to take care of himself. He has to fend for himself. He has to take care of his own needs for himself. There is nobody else to look after him, and he has to mind his own work. Very hard life indeed, and therefore he has to be very, very firm like a rock. There may be impediments to his growth, but he should not mind it. He should face the problems bravely and then get over them, and he should be concentrating upon the continuous progress. Well, this is the idea of the significance of this mounting the stone ritual. Again, it is symbolic, but it has the micro level level of the symbol, then the macro level of concept behind it. The boy is now presented with the garment. 8. A new garment is present. A very simple act. He can give a garment, the teacher can give it, and the student can wear it. But then, again, there is a symbolic act, and then the gods are attributed to it. Whatever. Well, Revati istva vyakshan prithikashtra akrintantva dhivo avayan avagna avrinchan sahasramantan abhito ayachan. The gods headed by Revati, they have, you know, they have made the yarn from the cotton, and the they have bit the cotton seeds, and then the Kritikas have made the yarn. They are all divinities. The Dhiyas, another set of divinities, they have woven the piece of the yarn into a cloth. And another set of divinities known as Gunas, they have cut the long cloth into the shapely size, particular size, and thousands of deities have provided the borders. Therefore, it is said in the Indian context that one should not wear a garment without a border. It has to have a border. The dhoti must have a border. So, in keeping with the Indian tradition, we have seen that all these small acts, shaving and then giving a garment, wearing, these are all given, they are dedicated to the god. I find that there are three or four significances in them. The first thing is, you are free from worries. Whether a particular act, any act is dedicated to the god, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. The success or failure of the particular act does not bother you, and therefore you are free from it. Secondly, when you are dedicated a particular act to somebody, your own ego is slashed. You don't get the feeling that I have done it, I have prepared. And then, since you are dedicating to the gods, especially to somebody for that matter, even if there are few flaws, the faults, they are forgotten. You don't attach much importance to them. Of course, the idea is to make it as perfect as possible, because it has to be dedicated to the god. But again, if by chance if there are any flaws, you don't over magnify it. And then a sense of contentment is developed. This is given by the god, and therefore it is to be accepted as it is. Contentment. And then bhakti, when all these acts are dedicated to your favorite deity of yours, the bhakti is evolved, and the bhakti is responsible for the mental purity, and it is the step towards the higher, the aim for higher liberation. So we find that in this ritual, psychological aspects, philosophical aspects, physiological aspects, all these are combined, as we are going to see further. Ya akrintan avayan, ya atanvata, yascha devihi antan abhito adananta, tastva devihi jarase samvyayan, tva ayushmaridam paridhatsva vasaha. Vasa means a garment. So the deities who have provided the yarn, who have done the weaving, who have provided the borders, may all these deities make you, or rather they protect you till your old age. May you wear this garment. Well, I find one significant aspect in this. Why are we repeating again and again, let them protect you till your old age? Why don't we say, may you live long, or let them make you live long? Well, I find that Well, when we read the Puranas, we will understand the significance of it. If the gods are very clever, apparently they will grant your boons, being satisfied with your penance, you have done the penance. But then there will be some subtle point in that. For example, there was a demon called Vritra. He performed a severe penance. But unfortunately, these fellows are very, very stubborn. They will perform the penance with, you know, with great steadfastness. And therefore, the gods have to grant the boon. They cannot say no. If the penance is so powerful, they have to come and deliver the boon, whatever they ask. See, his idea is, Vritra's idea is that he must kill Indra. Indra is the leader of the gods. And he must get that post of Indra. So that means he has to grow, Indra has to come down. So he meant Indra Shatrur Vardhasva. That is Indra. He is his own self, that is, he is Shatru, enemy of Indra. And the idea is, I must grow. Please make Indra's enemy grow, that is, make me grow. Now in Sanskrit, there are several types of compounds. A same word, a same compound can be split in different ways. It can be a Tatpurusha Samasa or it can be a Bahuvrihi Samasa. But the accent will tell you where exactly it lies. For example, if you say Indra Shatrur Vardhasva, that means Indra, the enemy, will have to grow. Or if you say Indra Shatrur Vardhasva, where the emphasis has shifted. So it is on the enemy of Indra. This fellow, by mistake, he shifted the accent. And so he said, Indra Shatrur Vardhasva. The god immediately, okay, granted. Immediately Indra, who was his enemy, grew in all the powerfulness, he became very powerful, and this fellow was defeated. Just a small mistake in uttering the shifting the accent, that has led to his downfall. But all these demons will, they will grow in strength, but the nemesis will act on them. Retribution will act on them. Somewhere they will commit a mistake and that will be the end of it. So we also have, and therefore, whenever the mantras will contain a particular, an appeal for a boon, like long life, they are very careful in choosing the words. And that we also find the story for Nachiketas in Kathopanishad. Well, he was given three boons by Yama. He was very clever. He wanted to hit two fruits in one stroke with one stone as it were. And so he asked, by the first boon, already asked the first boon, he asked, when I go back, my father should receive me with all affection as before. Two things he got by that. That is, he should go back home. And then his father also, forgetting all anger, he should receive him. So like that, we hear. If the prayer were to be like this, that is, my son should live long. Well, long or short, these are all relative. Compared to 1 year, 2 years is longer. Compared to 5 years, 10 years is longer. So what do you mean by long, being long? May you live long. What is it? Even if the fellow was to live for another 5 years, still a long period. And therefore, they don't ask like that. And if you ask, let my son live for 100 years. Again, 100 is a relative because 100 years in the earth is just about a few months in Jupiter. And then this again becomes relative. And therefore, in many of these prayers we find, let him live till his old age. Jaram gacchasi paridhatsva. May you wear this garment till your old age. Vaso bhava krishinam, etc. Shatancha jiva, sharadas suvarcha, rayascha posham upasambhyasva. So may you live till your old age. May the gods give you, make you live till your old age. Then everything is okay. Because old age doesn't come when you are 30 or 35, it has to come only in the 70s or 80s. May you have spiritual lust. May you wear this garment for your prosperity and nourishment. Then comes a ritual called Maunji Bandhana. That is here, the girdle thread, ninth one. The darba grass are twisted into a rope and then it is tied, a kind of a grass called Munja. Now it becomes Maunji. So it is tied to the waist of the boy. Very simple act.
apparently, but it has a significance. Because this maunji grass tied to the waist is supposed to, according to medical tests, or the Ayurveda text, it cures the urinary infection. It protects and also cures. And the teacher now prays, Iyam duruktat paribhadamana sharma varutam punati na agat prana pana abhyam balam aharanti priya devanam subhaga mekhalayayam. Mekhala means the waist, that the girdle. So may this girdle bring you, bring my student the power to withdraw, to withstand all evils. The evils that may cause any kind of suffering. Let it bring purity and prosperity. Let it bring all kind of strength. Let it make all his pranas, the vital as, very strong, very pure. Let it make him favorable to the gods. Because it is given by them, it is their gift. So again, this tying the girdle thread is only a symbolic act, but it is meant to augment truth and austerity and spiritual strength of the student, and it is supposed to guard him against all evils. As we have seen, it also has a medicinal effect. The boy then is given an upper garment made of the black antelope skin. Krishnajina it is called. Well, he has to wear it. He should not sit on it or sleep over it, but it has to be there as again as an upper garment. And this is again a symbolic gesture. And this Krishnajina, this black antelope skin, also has medicinal effect. It protects a person from tuberculosis, and therefore it is very effective. It's as is said in the medicinal text. The next, we go to the 10th point. The teacher and the taught, with their palms together like this, they will offer water oblations. A bit of it will still remain, and the teacher will take a little of it and then sprinkle over the head of the student. So with palms together, they will offer this particular, offer water into a vessel dedicated to the gods. Two mantras are recited in this context.
Agantra samaganmihi prasumrityam yoyotana arishtaha sancharemihi swasti charatadiha swasti agrihebhyaha.
The idea is, maybe transcend the mortality, maybe attain immortality, may we get rid of all evil things, may we get rid of all diseases, let there be prosperity, let there be peace and welfare for the student, for the teacher, as well as the entire student population. Now the boy in the dialogue, he now utters a prayer. He says proudly, we have attained a good teacher who has come all the way to take me. Let us drive away this mortality. Let us move without any evil affecting us. May we attain all welfare. May I attain welfare till the end of my brahmacharya. The entire brahmacharya period, well, should be very peaceful, and it should be contributed to my welfare and to the studies. And the sprinkling of the water. Well, the student again prays, may this water, the sprinkled waters approaching me like a wave of an ocean, let it bring me immortality. Well, immortality in the sense, well, all those who are born in this world have to die one particular day. But then the soul is immortal. Well, that particular point is emphasized here. And so attaining immortality in the sense, attaining Brahmajnana, the knowledge of the Supreme Self. That is the idea here. Then the teacher, the next point, he who holds the hands of the boy, and then he says the boy is dedicated to the respective gods. He says, he doesn't say that I am holding your hand. He says, Agnishte hastam agrahit. Agni is holding your hand, Lord Agni.
Somaste astamakrahi. Soma is holding your hand. So Agni is holding your hand, Soma is holding your hand. Likewise, the other gods are also invoked. Savita is holding your hand. Saraswati, Pushan, Adyama, Amshu, Bhaga, Mitra, several gods are invoked. And the teacher says, they are all holding your hand. Again, as we have seen on several occasions, it gives the student the moral courage. Well, all the gods are holding my hand. I have nothing to fear in this world. Then the teacher says, Dharmanatvamasi, Agnihitava Acharyaha, Mitraha. That you must become Mitra. You must become like the sun, as glorious, as brilliant as the sun, by your virtues. And Agni himself should become your preceptor. Well, in all the entire Vedic tradition, Agni is supposed to be the domestic priest, the teacher. And therefore, in addition to myself being I am only a mortal being, I am supposed to be your teacher. But Agni is your real teacher. Then, a ritual called Paridana is performed, 13th point. Again, it is a dedication to the gods. The teacher holds the hands of the disciple and offer the hands symbolically to the different divinities. Like that, he will say, Yamayatvam Paridhanam, that is, he hold it like this and then do a ritual act. Agnayetva Paridhanam Yasau, Somayatva Paridhanam Yasau. Likewise, dedicate to the other gods as well, Savita, Saraswati, Mrityu, Yama, Antaka, and then the water divinities, the plants, Vashadibhyaha, to the earth, to the Vaishvanaras. And then the teacher prays, Devasyatva Savitu Prasave Upanaye Asau Suprajaha Prajaya Bhuyaha Suviro Viraihi Suvarcha Vachasa Suposha Poshaihi. Means, I am accepting you as my student by the order of Sun God. Again, it's dedicated to the God. I am not accepting, but it is by the order of Sun God that I am accepting you. May you attain all kinds of prosperity, the spiritual luster, brilliance, good nourishment. Now the student, in the course of his dialogue, he says, Brahmacharyam agam ma upanayasva devena savitra prasutaha. Sir, he addresses the teacher, please take me into your fold for the practicing of the Brahmacharya, the celibacy, and being permitted by the gods, especially Savita. Now there will be a brief dialogue between the teacher and the student in a conventional way, very formal type of conversation. The teacher will ask, Ko namasi, what is your name? The student will say, I am so and so. Kasya brahmacharya asi, for what sake are you observing this brahmacharya, this celibate life? Also, pranasya brahmacharya asmi. Well, I am observing brahmacharya for the sake of very life, for the spirituality, for the entire life for that matter. I mean, for the life being in the proper form. Then the teacher addresses the sun god. We have a lot of prayers addressed to the sun god in this Upanayana ritual particularly, because the sun is a pratyaksha devata. It is a witness to all our activities, and he is one divinity whom we can see, a visible divinity. Yeshate deva surya brahmachari tam gopaya samamrita yeshate surya putrasya dirghayus samamrita yam swastim agnir vayus suryaha chandramaha apo anusancharanti tam swastim anusancharasau. O surya, he says, he is actually, in the literal sense, he is his student. But he says, he is your brahmacharini, your student. O Surya, protect him. He is like your own son. May he attain long life. And let him not face death at an untimely hour. Then he turns to the boy and says, may you attain all prosperity, all spiritual luster, being that which is enjoyed by great gods, Agni, Vayu, Surya, Chandra, the water divinities, and others. Then he also says, your path, your direction should be excellent. Adhvanam Adhvapate, Shrestasi Adhvanaha, Param Ashiya. May your path be excellent. The pathfinder must be
say wonderful. He should be, because it is said, one who leads always has greater responsibility, because others are blindly following. So you should be a pathfinder. And may your path be a great path. Then after this performance, ritual, the student and the teacher, disciple, together they perform certain oblations, point number 16. Oblations into the sacred fire, as we find in all the rituals. First, Indra is invoked because Indra is supposed to be the leader of the gods. On every auspicious occasion, we invoke Indra for protection. And therefore, then comes Agni, the domestic priest. O Agni, you give, as you grant him long life and spiritual laughter, strength. And then Soma, he should bring forth all benefits, like a mother taking care of a boy. And then the student himself performs an oblation into the fire. He prays, Medham Mahyam Angiraso, Medham Saptarshayaha Daduhu, Medham Mahyam Prajapatihi, Medham Agnim Dadatume. So this is a ceremony dedicated to education. He prays that the gods like Angiras, or the sages like Angiras, the seven sages, Atri, Bhrigu, Kutsa, Vasishta, Gautama, Kashyapa, Angiras, these are supposed to be seven great sages. Let those sages, let Agni and Prajapati, grant me intellect, Medha. The teacher may be prepared to teach, the student may sit there in the classroom, but unless he has the intellect to grasp, then learning process will be meaningless, and therefore he prays for Medha. So very often we have reference to it. And then he prays that he should never be separated from his teacher. Then comes an important ritual. The student holds the feet of the teacher and then he prays for the initiation into the Gayatri. Well, Gayatri is a very, very sacred mantra. Very sacred, very important, and should be chanted every day, dedicated to Lord Sun, and very subtle, very powerful. Om Tatsa Vituru Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhyamahi Dhyo Yona Prachodaya Aat. That's all. It is a couplet in three stanzas, and it is composed in a meter called Gayatri. The very word Gayatri is significant. It means Gayantam Trayate iti Gayatri. It protects a person who chants. That's the meaning, the etymological meaning. So meaning of this Gayatri mantra is very, very significant, addressed to the sun. May that sun god promote our intellect. So as we find, it's an educational ritual, and therefore protection of the intellect is emphasized here. And may the sun god, who is fit to be worshipped now, may we meditate upon his great luster. The idea is the same luster should be imbibed by us also, the spiritual luster. That is the significance of the Gayatri mantra. It's a very, very sacred mantra in the Hindu tradition. It is to be recited at all functions, at all ceremonies. At appropriate place. Then again, 18th point, there is another symbolic ritual. The boy seeks a danda, a stick. Suppose a stick about 3 to 4 feet. And the teacher grants him a stick. It's only a symbol. A stick. See, whenever we want to concentrate, we want something on which we can focus our attention and then concentrate. The stick is supposed to be part and parcel of the student life. He has to keep it wherever he goes. It will always be with him. And he concentrates upon it, and the power of concentration develops slowly. It increases. And therefore, that is the significance of danda. And then he prays, may listen to all good things. May become the protector of the great tradition. With that prayer, he receives the stick, the danda. Once he completes his brahmacharya life, he may set aside this danda. He will become a householder. But if a person takes to the sannyasa life, he has to again continue to keep the danda, the stick.
This is why Shankaracharya has the stick.
Mm. Yes. Almost all ritual.
They not also have kamandalu?
Yes, kamandalu water.
Yogurt.
Yes.
And then we find very significantly and very interestingly a set of prayers which consist of some paradoxical statements. The 19th point. Well, the student says, Smritam chame, asmritam chame, ubhayam vratam. Let smrita as well as asmrita, let both of them be my vrata, austerity. Well, obviously the particle a is a negative particle in Sanskrit. You say dharma, adharma, negative particle. Just opposite of it. So he says, let both smrita and asmrita be my austerity. That is a paradox. Smrita means scripture. If he simply stops by saying, let the scripture be my austerity, is understandable. But if he says, let both scripture and non-scripture be my austerity, well, apparently there is a paradox. But the idea is, there is significant behind it. The scripture, of course, all those things are already available, that will be taught by the teacher and he has to learn. In addition to what is said in the scripture, the teacher by himself, by his own experience, he may say many things. The moral ideas to be followed, the ethical values to be followed, which may not be found in any particular book, but the teacher may find it by his intuition, by his experience, and may convey. And those things also are to be followed, are to be his austerity. And therefore he says, both smrita as well as asmrita, what is already told in the scripture, what is not found in the scripture, but said by my teacher, let both be my prata or austerity. Then he says, let both ninda and aninda be my austerity. Ninda means what is condemned. What is condemned? That is what the kind of ordinary worldly temptations and attractions. Let them be my austerity, that is understandable. Aninda, what are not condemned. Well, let them also be my prata, he says. Certain things, the great truths, the values, they are not condemned. And what they are to be followed. So ninda and aninda both have to be my austerity. And then he says, let both Shraddha and Ashraddha be my austerity. Shraddha, faith. Ashraddha, non-faith. Again a paradox. It is solved. Well, faith in the rituals and non-faith in the other unnecessary things, the superstition or worldly things. In those things I should have Ashraddha, I should not have any faith in them. But in the ritual text I must have Shraddha. And therefore both Shraddha and Ashraddha are necessary. As we have seen in the Gita, Sukhadukke Samayakrutva Labhala Bodhayadeva. One should transcend all these things, the pairs of opposites. Pleasure and pain. It's not that I want only pleasure, I don't want pain. I should transcend both pleasure and pain. Similarly, profit or loss, victory or defeat. All these things have to be transcended. You cannot have one without the other. You cannot have victory without defeat. You cannot have pleasure without pain. And therefore, the best idea, best way of leading a peaceful life is to transcend both, neither pleasure nor misery. So both should be transcended. And therefore, Shraddha and all these pairs are here indicated. They have a significance, a philosophical significance. And then he says, I must both Vidya and Avidya should be my austerity. Vidya, knowledge, is understandable. But why should Avidya be there? Ignorance. Ignorance with respect to temptations, the worldly attractions. Let both Shrutam and Ashrutam be my austerity. The Vedas, Shruta. Ashruta, that is, the undesirable words we should not be listened to. Or gossiping, this, that. And he says again, Satyam Anrutam. Satya is truth, Anruta is falsehood. Let both of them be my austerity. Well, again there is a paradox. Satya is understandable, one should observe truth on it. But what about falsehood? Well, on certain occasions, the Anruta's falsehood is also has to be observed, and one should transcend both. For example, doctor is here. The doctor cannot say certain things to the patient openly. The fellow may die in about a day's time. But the doctor would never say that. You will be all right in about a few days' time. It is a lie, but she has to say that. She cannot say openly, you will die in a 24 hours time. So, and again it is said in our scriptures, what is truth? It is very difficult to, there is only a thin line of demarcation between truth and falsehood in certain occasions. Satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat, na bruyat satyam apriyam, priyam chana anurtam bruyat, yesha dharma sanatana. You must utter truth, all right, but truth should also be palatable, it should bring benefit to somebody. Raw truth, I will simply utter truth, though somebody may ruin, get ruined out of it. Well, that is not truth at all. It should bring some benefits. But just because it is pleasant and palatable, untruth, falsehood should not be uttered. Priyam cha na anrutam bruyat. Esha dharma sanatana. This is the sanatana dharma. Satyam bruya, all right, but it should be pleasant. It should speak truth pleasantly. Na bruyat satyam apriyam. If raw truth is going to bring about a downfall for somebody, don't say the truth, just keep quiet. Some big accident has happened, and it is going to cause a revolt somewhere. Don't say that, just keep quiet. So, therefore, truth as well as untruth, one should transcend. And that is the idea with which it is said here. Satyam cha anrutam cha, let them both be my brother. And tapaha atapaha. Penance and non-penance. Penance, we know penance, as you have observed with respect to word, thought and deed. Well, at least with respect to how it should be uttered with respect to the words, I can just quote a stanza from the Bhagavad Gita. Anudvega karam vakyam, satyam priyahitam chayat, swadhyaya abhyasanam chayva, vangmayam tapa ujjate. This is the penance of speech. Anudvega karam vakyam. A sentence, words that do not create a flutter, they do not create commotion, a revolt. Well, that should not be there. Words should be very pleasant here, it should not cause any, you know, very commotion. And satyam, truthful, priyam, pleasant, hitam, bringing benefits. Well, this is actually the observance of penance through words, and it should be practiced, practicable. What should be practiced? And therefore, that is a penance with respect, and of course with the word, deed, all these things. Non-penance, sometimes you have to transcend penance also. You cannot close your eyes to adharma, the wickedness that is taking place against in the community, for example. Sometimes you have to rebel against certain atrocities committed. That fellow is doing that, let him reap the harm of it. So one should not keep quiet like this. If there's some adharma is going on, if wickedness is intolerable, we have to rise against it, we have to rebel against it. And therefore, atapaha is also necessary for this world. Otherwise, adharma alone will prevail in this world, and dharma will be suppressed. And both vrata and avrata, let it be my austerity. Say vrata, let us say even in a very simple sense, observing a fast. Vrata, fasting should be observed. At the same time, not every day. Avrata also should be there. You should not observe fast on other days. There should be feasting. Okay. So on Ekadashi days you can observe fast, on other days you don't observe fast. So both vrata and avrata are necessary. So very interestingly, we have this set of paradoxical statements here, but each one has got a significance. And if you understand the tradition behind all this ritual, the paradox is no paradox, it can be solved. The idea is you must observe all the austerities that are attached to the particular divinities. Agni is associated with the prata or austerity of protecting. Indra, controlling, he is the leader of the gods. Prajapati, responsible for creation. Devas, the other gods, they are meant for giving. The very act of being God, they have to give everything to others. The king of gods, his role is to give satisfaction for everybody. The human beings, they have to, their vrata is uttering sweet words. The kings, their vrata is guarding. the fathers, their austerity is to bring about good children. Yama, his austerity is equality. He doesn't mind. He is a poor man, he is a rich man. Everybody, if the time is over, that's all. He takes away their life. And therefore, the Gandharvas, their austerity is singing. Gandharvas are divine singers. And Apsaras, dancing is their austerity. I must do all this, observe all these austerities in the proper time. Well, this is the idea with which the excellence, the special point feature of every god must be imbibed by the student, with so with that the prayer continues. Now the student gets up, there is one upasthana, the 21st point, and he prays to the sun, Pashyema Sharadashatam, Jeevema Sharadashatam, Nandama Sharadashatam, like that. The idea is he must see 100 autumns, 100 years, he must live for 100 years. Let me see, not simply living for 100 years, I must see the truth for 100 years. I must observe truth for 100 years. I must rejoice, lead a joyful life for 100 years. And enjoy the life for 100 years. Grow for 100 years. There has to be a continuous growth. It should not be static. I should hear good things for all the 100 years. There is no point in living 100 years when all the limbs are losing their capacity. With all the limbs intact, their faculties intact, it should be, the life should be a full life. And let me expound the truth for 100 years. Let me be victorious for 100 years. So this is how he prays for a long life, but purposeful life, not simply ordinary life. And then the teacher says, Yasmin bhutam cha bhavyam cha sarve lokaha samahitaha tena grinnami. I hold your hand by the order of the god Prajapati, in whom the past, present and future are present. So it is he who is responsible for the past, present and future. So by his order I am holding your hand, and may your life be excellent. Then the student, from practical point of view, he has to beg food. First he begs food from his mother and the sisters of his mother, other ladies who are assembled there. And this is again a symbolic act, because once he takes up the brahmacharya vrata, once he goes to the abode of the teacher, he has to beg for food every day and then bring the food that is collected, the rice that is collected, and then it is poured into the common pool. They all, the entire clan, all the teachers and students in the particular ashrama, the food is cooked and then they all share. So this is the setup of this Gurukula pattern. So by begging food, three or four things become significant. One, number one, well, he may be belonging to a very rich family, but by begging food, well, in those days, after all, a brahmacharin comes, nobody will deny the people in the household, they will all be very happy to give him some rice. The ego is slashed, irrespective of that position, the power, the money they have. They all have, all the brahmacharins are alike, they have to beg food. Ego is suppressed. Secondly, well, most of the problems arise because of our craze for accumulation. Accumulation of wealth, accumulation of power, all this contribute to one's downfall, and all other desires are the offshoot of this. And therefore, they don't accumulate. For that particular day, they beg food, and then cook and eat, that's all. And therefore, there is no room for greed or desires. Third point I see is, they need not worry about earning money for future, and therefore they can concentrate on the study. The future is taken care of, that day the problem is over. Next day, well, somebody is going to provide, so there is no botheration for them. So they will be able to concentrate. In the present day context, even while they are studying, the students are bothered by what is going to be their future. Will I get a suitable job? Will I be able to earn a lot of money? Will I have all the comforts? So these thoughts, problems, and concentration is upset by such thoughts, they are not able to bring out their best. Then we find a series of questions and answers between the teacher and the taught.
The teacher will ask, Brahmacharya, see, you should be a Brahmacharin. He will say, yes, I will be a Brahmacharin. Apo Ashana, you must sip water. That is, he has to perform the Sandhya rites where he has to sip water, uttering the names of Achyuta, Narayana, Govinda. And therefore, that you should perform steadfastly. Yes, I will perform. Karma Kuru, do your duties, all the duties that are assigned by the teacher. Yes, I will do. And then, significantly, Ma Divas Svapsihi, do not sleep during daytime. The teacher, the student says, yes, I will not sleep during daytime. Well, in the present day context, at least in India, I used to say in some of our public lectures, nowadays the students wake up till midnight or even past midnight. They waste their time seeing some filthy movies, and then when they come and sit in the classroom, they are tempted to sleep. And even on holidays, they waste their time sleeping lazily. And therefore, daytime sleep is to be avoided. So, Diva Mas Papsi, a very practical point. Don't sleep during daytime. Bhikshacharyam Chara. Do perform the begging. Beg for food and then eat little. All right. Acharya Adhinabham. Be devoted to your teacher. All right. Well, this is in fact the central point of the Upanayana ritual. Then after performing the ritual, the student continues for his entire life the performance of what is known as Sandhya. Sandhya worship. Three times he has to do. Once in the morning at the sunrise and during midday and again in the evening just at the time of sunset. Sandhya Upasana. Dedicated to the Lord Sun. There are five or six important stages of this Sandhya which just to be performed every day, thrice a day. One is Argyadana, offering oblations, water oblations to the different divinities. The second one is very important, significant, Atma Aikya Sandhana. That is, you unify yourselves with the divinities. Asavaditya Brahma Aham Brahma Vasmi. Aham Brahma Vasmi, as we have, some of us might have heard, one of the Mahavakyas. I am part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit. So that he says every day. So identification with the Supreme Brahman, that is the second point of what we do in the Sandhya. And then very significantly, pranayama, controlling of the breath. Well, this pranayama performed according to the rules, it can cure all the ills, all bodily, and it can increase spirituality. It can prevent all problems of health problems, it can cure the health problems, and it contributes to one's spirituality as well. So pranayama is excellent. Even those who don't have time to perform the entire Sandhya, they can at least perform the pranayama. And then the chanting of the Gayatri, or 32 times, or 32 times, or 64 times, or 100 times, depending upon one's time and availability. Because you dedicate to the sun, it is said, Arogyam Bhaskarad Ichet. Pray to Lord Sun for your health, because sun is responsible for the health. And then the fifth point is Upasthana, that is standing. So far he will be sitting and perform chanting and all those things. Now he will stand up and offer the salutations to the different deities, different directions. So these five components are important in the Sandhya. And the student has to perform all these things. And then for next 3 days, he eats a very austere food, non-spicy and non-salted and all that. And then he has to worship the Agni at least twice a day. Is known as Samit Adhana, with sticks known as the Samit sticks. He has to perform this every day. As a Brahmachari, he has to do it every day twice, once in the morning, once in the evening, in addition to the Sandhya worship. And prays for wealth, prosperity, self-preservation, knowledge, teachers' blessings, and intellect and spiritual brilliance. Well, this constitutes the performance of the Upanayana. I may just add just one or two more sentences about the one more ritual that is performed before the after the completion of the term of study and before a person gets married, it is known as samavartana. Literally, it means returning back. After the period of study is over, the student returns back to the house, home, and then he has a ceremonial shave and all that. He has a sacred bath. He wears the silken garment and all these things which are prohibited till now, because he has been wearing only simple austere garment. Now he will have he will wear a silken garment. He will apply sandal and all that which are prohibited till now. And then he will be, till now he has been not been wearing chappal, or he has not been holding an umbrella. He will be provided with a pair of chappals and an umbrella. So now he is ready for family life. That is the significance of this samavartana ceremony, which is the last of the rites before one gets married. Well, I think we had a bird's eye view of this upanayana ceremony, which is very significant, very important. Well, some of these rituals, as we have seen, they have been undergoing a lot of changes. Some of them are truncated, some of them are joined together as one ritual. But this upanayana is performed even today with great sincerity and devotion. And that is the significance of this ritual. It has a lot of say symbolism attached to it, and the micro and the macro concept attached to it. And therefore, it is very important in the entire ritual format. And I think that's what I wanted to say. You mean the same gurukula to which the father had gone? But if the same teacher is alive, well, he can be sent to the same school. Well, if he is not alive, maybe his own disciple now will be the chief priest over there.
There is nothing said that how the gurukula should be chosen.
Yes. No,
it is. Sort of
yes. Normally, it comes by tradition. That is, I studied under this particular teacher, and therefore I will send my son also to the same school. The same teacher may not be there, but his disciple will be there, because he would have inherited the same tradition. So he will be able to impart. So that is how generally, but it's not specifically stated in so many words.
What but surprises me is this, that this Gurukula teaches them to be humble, free from pride, free from possessive feelings. But after all that, there are some great rishis. The moment they feel something which is unpleasant, they curse that fellow. Like Durvasa or Shomitra.
See.
We have instances. How come that they become so intemperate?
Yes. You have read these instances in Puranas. Puranas and stories in books and in what you see in the cinema. Well, they always focus on one particular. See, thousands of things will be normal. Only when there is some abnormality, it will be flashed in the media. If the ordinary things will not be, 1,000 students are doing perfectly, it won't be flashed. If one fellow does something wrong, it alone will be flashed. So normally, so some of the stray incidents are there. But there are not many such instances where a teacher has cursed his own student. Very, very rare happening. And maybe he is provoked to such an extent. See, after all, teachers are also human beings. Sometimes they are overcome by anger. So, but there are also many such instances where the teacher says, "All right, I have cursed you in anger, but I will give you some redemption.
I'll
give you
a
redemption."
But like Vasishtha was always as calm as anything.
Yes, yes.
Vishwamitra always suffered every time he cursed. He lost all the whatever credits he had attained. He lost them. So in a way, it comes out as a saying that it's quite. It's difficult to gain, but it's easy to lose.
In fact, in everyday sandhya, one has to say, Kama Karshit, Manvira Karshit, Namo Namaha. Many people will be under the impression that they are the names of some two rishis, some two sages. Kama Karshit, Manvira Karshit. Apparently looks as though they are names of two rishis, sages. It is not. Kama Akarshit. Kama, desire.
greed, that must be withdrawn. Manyu means anger. Manyu akarshitu. I must withdraw anger and desire. That is the prayer. Yes.
Professor, thank you for your talk. Just wanted to ask one question. During the period of Brahmacharya, which I think you said was 7 years, is the child allowed to have any contact with his parents or not?
Normally, it is not.
No contact?
Yes. The student undergoes a full course of his study only in the remote forest area. Only after the completion of the study period, he comes home. Well, even kings used to observe this. We find in a work
Rama
called...
Rama and Lakshmana, they taken away by Vishwamitra.
That is for a brief period. But then, that was even kings used to send away their sons. That is what we find in one of the works known as Kadambari. The king sent his son away in order to wean him away from all the temptation, because in the harem, in the palace, he will be pampered and petted. And therefore he sends him away to the school in the distant area. He comes back only after the period of study is over. But later on, maybe in the middle ages or later stages, it was relaxed. They could come home now and then during festivities and go. And slowly that Gurukula system itself vanished in the course of time.
So actually the students would have to get out of the forest to go and beg for food.
I mean, forest in the sense, it will not be too far away, right inside a deep forest. No. Forest in the sense, at the outskirts. At the outskirts. Bank of a river, yes. The houses may be 4 or 5 miles away. They will all go out big.
They have a similar system still in Thailand with the Buddhist monks. They do spend, parents to send their children, and they spend a year.
Monkhood.
Monkhood. And part of it is that they do have to. The concept of that these, even in the English translation, is begging.
Yes.
They are not beggars.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the connotations are very different.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Begging is a poor translation.
Bhikshus are not beggars.
Yes, yes, yes.
There is a parallel.
There's only, so we can call it, say, ritual begging. I mean, the word itself doesn't suit.
Bhiksha.
That is why we don't have, we have a very, very significant called bhiksha. Yes. Yes.
There is a system.
What are the five sort of components you said of the Sandhya worship? You said there were five different.
Yes, yes.
What are the Gayatri and then?
There is offering oblations, water oblations to the different deities. Mainly dedicated to sun, and then the practice of Gayatri, the utterance of Gayatri mantra, and then Upasthana. He stands up and offers prayers to the different deities and different directions, and then
Atma Aikya.
Yes, Atma Aikya. That is your identification with the Supreme Being. Aikya Sandhana.
And then Pranayama.
Pranayama. Yes.
Professor, where would the deer skin come from? Would it be a deer that had been hunted or ritually killed or one that had died naturally? I'm asking because there's a lot of contention now as to how much there was ahimsa even amongst the Brahmin class. So some would say it was only a deer that was killed, died naturally. Others would say it would be killed. Could you perhaps answer that rather contentious
there
question?
There were two or three things. That is, there were certain, unfortunately, certain animal sacrifices also. So some of the sacrifices, these animals would be sacrificed, and its skin will be used for this kind of uttari. Or it will be hunted by the hunters, they will come and sell. On this occasion, they will come and sell. It was kind of a dress that was it was accepted. But later times, ahimsa came into being. And nowadays, nobody gives full skin. What they do is a very small piece of the antelope skin will be made available. It will be tied to the the Yajnopavita, just as a mark, a symbolic.
Isn't leather considered inauspicious?
Not inauspicious.
It's not inauspicious.
No. Only the leather of special certain animals only.
It's considered
the tiger's skin.
Oh, it's okay.
And black antelope skin.
Uh-huh.
Only some of these.
Mm-hmm. Others
they are considered to be.
They're okay.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
In some African tribes, we have seen the girls who are just before they become teenagers. They are taken to a school in the bush called Bush School, and they are given a lot of training, and no outsider is allowed to go and see that. And then they get graduated. And the way you understand they have gone through that is they apply white clay on their body and white clothes.